For January the 13th, 2017, we talk about Vermintide, the Scalebound cancellation, and we ask you for your 2017 video game predictions. Welcome to Level 180. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm Jella Prendez.
I'm Ben Merkel.
And you're listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. Starting late tonight, not that you care, because you're hearing this a couple days later. Because
get to the video games, Cole, please.
Gosh, stick to the games. No, I overslept. How does that happen when you start recording at 8:30 p.m.? It starts when Cole sits down on the couch to read and then just wakes up with a supernatural sense at 8:31 thinking, something. I need to do something, don't I?
Well, that's first off, what? props to you for having that weird paranoia sense, because I do that too. Like, mm-hmm. I'll pass out because I'm running myself too hard, and then just I pass out and I wake up and I'm just like, oh shit, I gotta do a thing now. Oh, that's so props to you for actually waking up, because it's hard to do. It sounds like you needed
it. A lot
of
people in general.
Yeah. You woke up. Good. Congratulations.
Well, I don't know. You woke up terrified. Congratulations, Cole. You did it.
Oh, I know. Like, I used to actually have like nightmares about being late for shit. So. Mm-hmm. Yeah, like I agree.
Yeah,
I feel that.
Well, I just feel bad.
Yeah, what's it going to be next, Cole? The Roomba ate your microphone?
No, the Roomba can't reach that. It's very low to the ground.
Well, I can tell you something that's more exciting and happy anyway.
Do it.
So, listeners may have realized from commentary I've made in the last several episodes that I've had a lot of shit going on in my life. Well, this was going to affect me going to PAX South at the end of this month, and listener Farmer kind of bailed me out. He is helping me by letting me crash with him and all the dudes he's coming from Tennessee with. So, like, thank you to Farmer, Brandon, Zach, and Jacob for letting me last minute just, like, jump into your room and make a pallet on your floor. So, you know, like, I cannot afford $400 to $500 for a damn hotel for a couple of nights. I just can't do it. So,
that is pricey.
It is pricey. I'm going to have to already rent a car because my car died and there is no ETA on when it might be fixed. So, like, I'm having problems. So, provided that the marathon doesn't kill me, I will be at PAX South at the end of the month. And you can ping me on whatever social media you like, at Jollichon, and let me know if you want to meet up. And also, there's the Slack channel, the local Meats and Meats channel. Mm-hmm. You can talk to me there. And Ben, are you going to be there?
I haven't bought my ticket yet, but I might pull an Audible and come down Saturday. I think I didn't know hotel rooms were that expensive, so I'll probably just do the drive back to Austin and crash at my place sort of thing. But
yeah, there might be somebody who is on Slack who is selling a ticket. Somebody had mentioned it to me. Sea Bird Song, I think. You might want to check around.
Are they
around.
Sold out?
I don't know if he sold it or not, but he was looking to get rid of a ticket, so you might want to ask him.
Gotcha. Okay, cool.
Yeah. Wow.
Cool.
That's crazy.
It always
catches me off guard how many listeners and how many community people are down there in the American South.
Mm-hmm. Well,
Jella,
I don't know how
much. You should just run your marathon to run to PAX South. Just solve the problem that way. Right?
Well, that would be more like doing the MS-150 or something and like biking over there, because that's a little far. Mm-hmm. So anyway.
Yeah. Well, that is very cool, Farmer, and I hope that people go up and talk to you at the at the thing.
Yeah, well, Farmer packs. Yeah, Farmer, as you may or may not know, was basically my first fan. He was the first person to message me and be like, "You're really cool on The Level," and he made me into a cornbread. He worked at the time. He was a bake, at a bakery, and he made a cornbread and then drew me on the cornbread, and it was a jalapeno cornbread.
Mm.
Nice.
Yeah.
And so.
Very cool. Yeah. So any other kind of general banter stuff going on in the room tonight? I had like literally the fact that I overslept is the only news that I have.
Well, it's very exciting to you. I'm sure your heart rate was through the roof.
Yeah. Yeah.
Woke up anyway.
Yeah. Dennis, how about you?
Nah, man, I got nothing. No? I'm ready to
Ben?
Ready to record.
No, nothing too special. I'm playing. I will mention one thing. I don't think I've mentioned on the show yet. I'm playing a board game called Seafall. It's like a legacy game where you play it on multiple sittings and then the rules of the game change.
That's so like new legacy game, right? Like from the dude.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. It's by the same guy who did Risk Legacy and Pandemic Legacy. And so I'm playing the sixth game of that this coming weekend. So I'm excited about that.
Mm.
That's about it, though.
Seafall sounds, I don't know why, it's just got the ring of like one of those eighth grade joke setups. Like, oh man, my Seafall really hurts. What's a Seafall? And then you like, oh, you said something really like nasty. But I can't, it just like, I don't know what it actually is. I don't think it actually goes that way. It just has that ring to it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Touch my Seafall.
Oh boy. I'd rather not, sir. Sir, I'm going to have to ask you to leave. So let's get on with the show. We have the usual thing for you, the brief, the multiplayer, and the grind, and we're gonna get started with
the brief,
where we talk about things that are happening in the world of video games around us. So let's take a look here. Jala, tell me about this the story out of Cuba.
I'm excited because
I think you mean Cuba.
People listening may or may not know that I'm half Cuban. My dad was born in Havana and raised there until his family fled Castro during Operation Pedro Pan. So this is near and dear to my heart because my family has connections to this place. Cuba is developing its first indie game by the way of Josue Palieri and Johan Hernandez, which they form Empty Head Games. So it is basically a notable achievement because Cuba has been kind of isolated maybe for like forever. And because of their they've had such severely limited internet access that they have to go out to a park to get a Wi-Fi signal in limited amounts of parks in Havana to even pick up the internet. And, you know, they have outdated hardware and they don't have very many opportunities to collaborate with anybody because they're, you know, like they have been isolated for so long. So basically they're building this game from the ground up on their own without all the tools and troubleshooting and tips that you can pull up in less restricted environments like the U.S., you know. They're working out of Havana, which is, again, where my dad was born. So that's cool. The main guy, Josue, had graduated from Havana's University of the Arts, and he worked as a graphic designer. And before he began working on the game, he had already been doing drawing and animation and produced like an interactive conceptual piece for a major art show, which he calls a playable non-game. So I don't know exactly like how you would play it. Like it's interactive, so whatever. I guess a walking simulator?
David isn't here, and he would be the person who would say, oh, you mean like No Man's Sky or something like that? Stanley Parable. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Way to kick a game while it's, you know, raking in a ton at the top of the Steam charts.
Mm-hmm. Hey, I'm just acting as a proxy here.
Yep. Well, anyway, he had said that he realized after he made that the structure of conceptual artwork and video game design are not too different, and then decided to launch into making a video game because that's something that he always wanted to do. He launched an Indiegogo campaign over in Miami, and it was successfully funded. And so he's been working on it ever since with his partner. And he's been helped by a nonprofit in the U.S., called Innovadores, which is a tech incubator and entrepreneur exchange program for Cuba. So that's cool. Now, the game itself is called Savior. It is a 2D platformer where you wake up as a character named Little God who finds his world crumbling around himself. And then he decides that he's going to search for the great god in the hope of saving the world, somebody with more power than him to try to, you know, rescue what's left of his world. And the main thing for me is the visuals, of course, because art. They are entirely hand-drawn and hand-animated, and they are based on the work of a 19th century painter named Arnold Böcklin, specifically his work Isle of the Dead, which, as Balieri put it, is a strange mix of reality and dream. So that's just right up my alley, the kind of thing that I'm interested in anyway.
Yeah.
But just from, like, if you watch the video, you can Google it, find it on YouTube, saviorthegame.com. You know, you can see some of the things that are happening in the game. It looks like they're trying to incorporate some interesting, maybe not game mechanics so much as interesting ideas. Like, there's a point where you're jumping on platforms, and as you jump on the platforms, it highlights boxes of text and things like that that you know, add to the story, which is kind of interesting. But anyway, Palieri said that he wants this game to be more than just Cuba's first indie game. He wants it to be a great game, you know, not just a good game for a Cuban guy, you know, but just a good game overall. Yeah. And right now it's in development for PC, but they're hoping, of course, to release it on consoles at some point in the future. So I was pretty jazzed about that. And the way Indiegogo works, you can still back the campaign. So even though it is done, you can still, you know, pull that up and do that thing. So that's cool.
Yeah.
So I would recommend that you take a look at it because the graphics and stuff are really awesome. And it looks like it is indeed going to be an interesting game to play. So, and that's not just because it's happens to be artwork that is right up my alley and happens to be an indie game that's, you know, like a weirdo indie game, which is kind of my jam. But,
yeah,
you know, like it looks like it'll be interesting to see because they're not building it in something like RPG Maker or anything like that. They don't have those tools, you know.
Yeah, that's remarkable.
Doing everything. Yeah, they're doing all of this on their own. So that's really neat. So
yeah, I had no idea about this. I don't know, this art style is great. I was not even aware of their influence, that Arnold Böcklin and Isle of the Dead.
Yeah. So it's definitely worth a look just to even skim through the video and just watch the video and see, you know, what they've got going for it. Mm-hmm. So if it ends up being something kind of like Abyss Odyssey, which is, of course, out of Chile, mm-hmm. like that, such a neato game. Like if this ends up being something like that, oh, I'm going to be excited. Super yeah. excited. I mean, yeah. it already looks pretty neat. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
If it ends up being a magical realism, surreal platformer, like it looks like, yeah. I mean, we got this guy swimming with some squids.
Yep.
I'm down for it too.
Oh yeah. So
yeah, very cool.
I'm excited.
Yeah.
I'm excited.
I don't know that I have anything to add or ask about that. That's just a cool story.
Mm-hmm.
We have to keep our eye on it.
Yeah. I'm going to go over to mine, just because, I'm a little bit bummed out about it. This is related to a Platinum game, a game from Platinum Games. There we go. That was kind of it was abruptly canceled here, this week as we are, you know, as you're listening to this. So Scalebound is the name of this game. And this was, going to be kind of a feather in Microsoft's cap. It was going to be coming to Xbox One. And I think it was going to have like cross-buy on PC as well. And they showed it at a couple of E3s, kind of saying, hey, look at what we've got. This being kind of a strange, kind of like mix of something like a Monster Hunter, with a Last Guardian, with like a character action game where you were fighting dragons on dragons, but you were still like human sized scale. Right. And yeah, just like they decided, yep, we're going to take this out. And this kind of leaves Platinum not only with only one game coming out this year, here in a couple of months, Nier Automata is going to be coming out. But also kind of like at the tail end of a lot of either kind of bad or mediocre games, such as like The Legend of Korra, the Transformers Devastation game, the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles game, Star Fox, like a 2-year run of some kind of just like 6-ish games, if that. And so, like, for a company that I really like to read, to kind of get this, to get this view of them right now, or at least to understand that this is kind of the perception that's happening as like floundering like this, like, I have every faith that, yeah, you know, that that Nier is going to at least be noteworthy. It's a real, yeah, it's a real bummer. I don't, you know, Scalebound looked cool. I was probably gonna have to like upgrade my PC sometime if I wanted to play it, but I just don't. I don't know. I went better for Platinum.
Well, this is literally the first time I've heard about this game. Like, I saw headlines about it being canceled, and that I was not aware of it at all ahead of time.
It was so, it was a mainstay at E3 presentations for Microsoft in 2014, and then I think they showed it this year too.
Interesting. Okay.
Hmm.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's been in development or whatever, and then it got axed. That sucks.
Yeah, and like, it was one of those things where it was like 10 a.m. Eastern time. Hey, an anonymous rumor comes out and says, "Hey, this game is in trouble." And then I see that all over on Twitter. And then at 1 p.m., like, yes, this game has been canceled. But it was Microsoft that actually made the announcement. They're like, but we have so many other great things coming out, like Halo Wars 2.
Oh, like, man. Yeah, that just feels bad when the cancellation for the game, like, hey, and then this thing that people worked really hard on is just smothered in the, but look at all this other shiny stuff. Like,
Yeah.
I feel for the people who worked so hard on this game.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that was the case.
It looked legit cool.
Yeah, like, I'm watching video for it right now, and it seems like the bit that they're showing, which I guess anyone can create a good bit of a game.
Yeah, yeah.
But would make me want to play it.
Mm-hmm. Well, hopefully Platinum is around for them to incorporate some of those ideas elsewhere.
Yeah.
Looking at their Wikipedia page, it looks like they have two games coming out in 2018. So.
Oh yeah. Is one of those Scalebound
and shit?
Yeah. I was gonna say, is one of those Scalebound, because that is no longer accurate.
So here's a thought, because this really has shades of The Last Guardian in it, in that you are kind of co-oping with this giant, you know, somewhat autonomous monster thing. Although this one seems a lot more combat oriented. But I wonder if the Last Guardian's kind of mediocre showing had anything to do with the decision to cancel it.
Man, that is, I mean, so that's delayed by like a month. No, the game, the Last Guardian itself was delayed by 10 years. But like that news, right? So the game, Last Guardian comes out middle of December. The game is already in trouble. I would have to think those decisions like take a longer time than that.
Right. That would not be the sole factor, but I wonder if it's like, you know, some other person's like, you know, hey, you guys have been struggling for a while, and it just looks like this genre is going to happen now. So,
yeah.
This fighting on dragon back genre. Yeah.
I love I've been thinking about it since I saw the screenshots, and I can't think of any other game or even movie at the moment that combines dragons into a pseudo like modern day setting.
Drakengard.
Oh, does that do it?
Let's see. I believe so. Yeah.
Okay, cool. I like that in a way, like that just feels cool.
Rain of Fire.
Yep.
Is another, does it?
No, that's a movie starring Christian Bale.
And Matthew McConaughey.
Let me see here. I actually don't know. Oh yeah, Drakengard is just medieval Europe. Shit.
Yeah, that's so. I'm looking at that now, and it does seem medieval.
In the early Pern books, the dragons.
I like that. Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
In the early Pern books, the dragons were genetically engineered creatures made for a specific purpose. So people came from spaceships and colonized a planet and then made dragons. So yeah, that's how that happened in that world.
I'm very happy it was you who said that, because I'm normally the person who falls on the Pern grenade.
Well, you know what? Like, I hear you disparage that series all the time, and you know what? It's fine. It can be dumb fiction, and you can still like it. Oh, yeah. I am not ashamed to say that I like the damn Pern books, and if anybody has a problem with that, you take a flame war with me, buddy.
No, I read all of them up till when Anne McCaffrey stopped writing. Like, I read, you know, like all the Weirs at Pern and all that. I didn't care. That's a really good book. I liked, I still, like, when I was in Portland a couple years ago, I got, like a weird, I don't know if it's, like, first edition or whatever, at Powell's. Like, a, you know, gigantic one, because my old one fell apart. Yeah.
Yeah, cool.
You know, I just have to put in that ironic detachment so people think I'm cool, sure. Jala.
No. I am secure in my whateverhood. Yeah. I'm fine.
Yeah.
But something it's basically the protagonist from Infamous Second Son riding a dragon, and I'm down for that.
In Scalebound?
Yeah.
Not anymore.
No, not anymore.
Yeah,
someone else do it.
What were you gonna say, Ben?
Well, two things. Maybe they were worried that it was going to be too similar to Dune, and they saw what a commercial failure that movie was, so that's why they axed it.
Dune to like 30 years ago. Dune.
Dune.
They make these decisions really slowly.
The other thing I wanted to interject with is they did make a Reign of Fire video game, so there is at least one game with dragons in a modern setting.
Oh, that's ridiculous.
Mm-hmm. That's pretty old, though.
Did they make a a video game of Dragonheart, the movie where Sean Connery voices a dragon?
I'm sure they did.
Oh, did that have Dennis Quaid in it?
I have no idea.
I believe so. Yes.
Yeah.
Oh gosh, it's funny how Reign of Fire, you know, just turns into a very generic video game by its cover. That's hilarious. If we just had Christian Bale's face on the cover, I probably would have remembered it, but no dice.
I really like the cover, how it's dragons and then choppers in the distance firing at said dragons.
Yep. Well, okay. Is it even firing at the dragon? Does it even look like it's going to hit the dragon, but whatever.
No, they're not competent choppers.
Yeah.
So I was lucky enough this year to go see Trans-Siberian Orchestra, and it was fantastic, like over Christmas. It was so much fun. But I am not joking at all when I say the theme of the second act of their show was dragons versus helicopters. I shit you not.
Helicopters attack peaceful dragon realm.
Yeah, I mean, the dragons were pretty pissed off too. And then there was a segment where like a tiger broke out of its cage. It was it was interesting.
Someday I will actually see that live myself, but I have not to date.
Yeah,
it was pure unabashed spectacle. That you know, it was just it was fun to be a part of. So
yeah,
there, it was good stuff.
There so there's one final thing about this, and we can move on. But somebody, be it Microsoft or Platinum, is going around and basically trying to erase the existence of Scalebound from the internet. Like, it's a thing people have noticed, like, hey, trailers are being pulled from YouTube and Vimeo and places where they used to be, like, basically, like not a cool thing, guys. Like, I understand it's a little bit of a letdown for you. You don't want to have that mark on your record, but, like, that game existed, and it's a little bit scary what you're trying to do, actually.
Yeah, like, what
trying
what
to make the internet
to
forget.
Erase it? Like trying to free up the mind space so they can focus on our other games.
Yeah. Like Halo Wars 2.
Well, like, why are they wasting their resources doing that when they should be making a new game? Like, you know, if they're going to cut this one, they might as well just move forward. Why doesn't even make sense.
It's probably just some marketing intern who was set loose at that. Yeah.
All right, I want to inject with another piece of dragon trivia. Apparently, there are two sequels to the movie Dragonheart, one that came out in 2000 and one that came out in 2015, which is a prequel.
I knew about the sequel. I did not know about the prequel. Then again, I haven't paid attention to anything in a while. So.
Yeah, that is ridiculous.
Mm-hmm. Is the subtitle for the prequel Beating a Dead Dragon?
It's called Dragonheart 3, The Sorcerer's Curse.
Oh, why would they call it 3 if it's whatever? Okay.
They should just call it Teflon, 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 the Teflon.
Oh, I saw someone posted they you know read a list of all the games that are coming out in the next year, and they said I've thought of a new game to play. You say this year I played, and you make up a title for a game, and the next year the next person says this year I played, and they do that title plus a subtitle.
Mm-hmm.
The third person or wrap back around the first one says this year I played. They say the subtitle and then a new subtitle. So the subtitle becomes the main title, and then you add the new subtitle.
Yeah.
And that's the first person to say something that actually is a title or subtitle loses. They said it's surprisingly hard to do.
Nice.
Dennis, I want to hear about this pernicious League of Legends player.
Yeah, so this is less a news piece and more a think piece. That sounds douchey. just a really interesting article examining what to do about toxic players, specifically in League of Legends, and specifically one incredibly skilled, incredibly toxic player. When banning the players only seems to fuel their popularity. So this is a player called Tyler One. Who, you know, plays League of Legends, is challenger tier, which is like, you know, within the top percent, top 200 players or on a server or something like that. So incredibly good, like especially given how seriously people take that game. It's hard to be as good as he is, especially because he solo queues, which means he doesn't really play with a team. And he only plays as a character called Draven, which is kind of like a C-class character. That, you know, the meta shifts in League of Legends and everyone's trying to pick the characters that have like the best advantage or are most appropriate for the situation. And he just sticks with this kind of C-lister and is able to hang out in Challenger 2 with that. But when he wasn't able to get that character, either because someone banned it or if he thought his teammates weren't doing well enough, he would throw a fit. He would feed the other team, essentially intentionally lose the game for him and his team.
Mm-hmm.
And just in general rage and be toxic and you know, be the worst of a worst in a, of the worst in a community that is already the worst of the worst. So, you know, incredibly skilled guy. Like it's incredible that he could do what he was in challenger tier while still throwing so many games for rage. So he had a modest following, which as he was more toxic started to grow. They, you know, banned him, eventually permabanned him and said, like, not just you have to start a new account, but like any account that we know is associated with you will be banned.
Mm-hmm.
And now he's essentially making his living starting new accounts, climbing through the ranks. And then once he gets high enough for anyone to notice him getting banned, having to start a new account, climb through the ranks.
How do you make a living doing that?
because he's insanely popular now on Twitch. Simply because he is so toxic and rages so hard and, you know, of course, is so good. So I just thought that was incredibly interesting.
He's like the Donald Trump of League of Legends.
Jesus.
Oh, God.
I got chills when you said that. That's awful.
Yeah.
It is. It's surprising. Yeah, that's... Yeah, I watched a video of this guy when Dennis posted the link and wow.
So I thought I'd put the question to you guys, like, how do you deal with something like this where, you know, on the internet, like even banning someone isn't seeming to solve the problem?
So I've been kind of following or at least paying attention to what Riot is doing with player behavior stuff for a little bit, specifically because they do have that reputation for always being the worst, but they always seem to be very proactive about trying to fix it. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems to me that most of the effective, like some of the most effective stuff that they've done actually doesn't really target any one individual. So it can't make any martyrs. Right.
Interesting.
So
yeah.
Like there's some kind of weird figure where something as simple as making chat opt in, like, okay, if you play League of Legends, like chat is just off. You have to turn chat on. Reduces the amount of toxicity by like some huge percent that I can't actually call up. When it becomes sure. Like down to one particular person who can turn into a legend and like be idolized and just kind of, because of the way this works, continue to play and continue to exert influence. Like, I don't know, like it gets down to, I mean, obviously you can split an atom, but like, you know, once it gets down to a single person, you can't you can't really like deal with them as effectively as you can deal with like a particular type of behavior or a particular like swath of people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Very fair. It's interesting. I saw the article kind of advocates maybe they should give him something to lose to get his behavior back in line. And that, you know, allowing him to kind of maybe, you know, be a part of the competitive scene like he might be if he wasn't permabanned, mm-hmm. Would mean that he would take things more seriously or that, you know, the basically he's got nothing to lose now. So he acts out as much as he wants. Although he, you know, it seems like recently he has been behaving and he's been, even though he's been playing the game, he's not supposed to, you can't stop him from doing that.
Right.
And so the questions have been like, okay, well, how long do you keep him permabanned like this or auto banned whenever they can find him? Is there a point at which you can say he's like reformed? Or how much is this? Well, like, you know, he's joking for, you know, he's pretending to be reformed for, you know, his audience.
Yeah, he is because his website even has shirts and shit for sale that have hashtag reformed on them and things like that. And, you know, he's using that as like his catchphrase. And yeah, he has gone through 22 accounts trying to get back into stuff and they keep on auto banning him and until more recently, apparently. But yeah, so I was watching his reaction video when he was listening to the criticism about everything. And I don't know. I don't know how much I buy how reformed he is, but it's kind of like when the cops say, we don't want to release the names of these people who did this atrocious act of, you know, violence against other people because to do so is just to give them notoriety, which is what they want. You know, mm-hmm. It's kind of like by calling this particular guy out, you just give him more attention, you know?
Yep.
And that's...
You say to anybody else who, you know, wants to be a troll, hey, yep. You know, this is a path for you. All they have to do is see that, like, if I'm outrageous enough and funny enough, I can make money on Twitch.
Well, and what he even said was, you know, in his reaction video, he was like, you know, when I had 50 viewers, I wasn't like that. I didn't even speak in chat. I would only type stuff and I didn't type flaming messages. But then I realized somewhere along the way that I'm an entertainer is what he said. And so, you know, he was acting out in, you know, intentionally in order to generate that audience because people liked to watch him, you know, act like a troll. Mm. So.
Yeah. And the article doesn't really touch on that, just that there is such an appetite apparently to watch people be dickheads on Twitch.
Yeah.
Like that is a whole side of the problem that I don't think Blizzard can really exert any control over.
Oh, you mean Riot?
Excuse me, Riot. But it is, you know, nonetheless part of the equation for sure. Like, would there ever be an instance in which they would look at, hey, how can we make people like this less fun to watch?
Yeah, how do you do that?
Thinking of like ridiculous things you can do with the character or with their screen or interface. Once they're identified, like it becomes more like kitty, like MS Paint clown style. But even that just says like, hey, here's a cool and funny person who is meant to be emulated at a glance in a Twitch thumbnail. Fuck.
Yeah.
and how do you do that in a team based game without punishing like every other person that he's playing with?
Yeah.
Yep. And Twitch just loop Johnny Cash hurt on whatever somebody gives to his page.
Everybody knows the Nine Inch Nails version is better. Come on.
I think Trent Reznor disagrees with you, but...
I knew it was one way or the other. Shit. Yeah. Sorry, I said that as a joke, but then I... Yeah. Womp. Yeah, this is frustrating because I don't like to see the class clown or the troll get ahead like this.
Yeah, and I mean, it speaks to also, you know, esports growing up a little bit. Like, you know, the Bengals have Vontaze Burfict, who is a complete ass clown and does much the same things that this guy is doing in the form of football. So it's something they're going to have to figure out how to deal with.
Yeah. Nope, but all of a sudden he's just like a fun outlaw who is meant to be revered instead of reviled.
He's Batman, except the idea is just being terrible to people.
Ugh. Yeah.
Don't feed the trolls, guys.
This makes me sad. Ben, tell me about Aliens.
The movie?
No. I can be more specific if you want.
No, that's all right. It's my story. Back off.
No, that is, I think, the most aggressive I've ever heard you be, Ben.
I'm so sorry. I just, here's something I should have put at the top. I just got a Fitbit this week, so my heart rate probably spiked when I said that. I'll have to check later. Anyway, the story this week is a new alien race appeared in the game Elite Dangerous after, I think, 2 years of being out, that people had not discovered before. The name of the race is called the Thargoids, and they're like an insectoid race. And they released videos of that people have had sightings with them, essentially. So there's a video online on YouTube that shows somebody who found them, one of the first ones. And so his interaction with the race is it just scanned his ship and then just went off into like hyperspace or whatever. I've never played Elite Dangerous, so I don't know what all the terms are in the game. And so apparently people on Reddit are trying to compile a list of all the places in the galaxy of where you can interact with these people. But the interesting part of it is that they had like content in the game that was buried this deep that it didn't come out for 2 years.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome.
So is it truly that the content was in the game from the start and they're just finding it, or was it patched in at some point?
They said that they had plans of putting them in the game as far back as 2012 when they were just starting their Kickstarter. They commented that they're going to have more of their content in the future, and right now that you can only encounter them. I don't know if you can. I think the interaction that you can have with them is somewhat limited. But I believe that they've been in the game for that long. So yeah. Hmm.
Yeah, that's incredible.
They look really great. They're like eight-sided space starfish that are covered with eyes on one side.
Yeah.
It's almost like your Roomba.
Yeah, somebody sent me a link to this in response to my Roomba video, which all that didn't get as much traction as I wanted.
I liked it.
I saw it.
But yeah, I'll post a link to that because I'm small and vain. but yeah, like this thing is really cool, and it's kind of remarkable that they managed to hide for so long in a game that like inspires as much devotion, feverish play as this one does. Like Elite Dangerous, mm-hmm. like this is, you know, this is the follow-up to like Wing Commander or X-Wing, stuff like that. Like this is a space exploration piloting kind of game.
Yeah, I feel like this game needed better marketing because this is essentially what No Man's Sky promised. So, yeah.
That seems like a brief to me.
Mm-hmm.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer, where we ask people a question and they answer. Dennis, what is the question that you ask the nice people?
I asked them about predictions. So I asked them to tell the future a little bit and talk about what they expect to see in 2017 in terms of just games, hardware, or overall trends that they think will have an impact.
Yeah, and I'm going to get us started with Chase, who says, the Nintendo Switch will get a very bad real name. We'll all make fun of it for a few weeks until it just seems normal. Chase, I'm sorry. I think the Switch is the real name.
In a few weeks, like, you are underestimating how petty we can be.
I mean, it's weird. People stopped making fun of the Wii after about a month, I think. I think everybody got the piss out of their system, and then they were done.
To be fair, wasn't the Wii called the Nintendo Revolution for a long time?
Yeah. So Wii is to Revolution as Switch is to, like, the NXD or whatever it was. No, just the NX is what it was.
Okay.
Yeah,
that'd be great if they renamed it the Nintendo Bait.
Yeah,
I like it.
Yeah, I'm curious about the Switch. Speaking of Jala, what does Sam say?
Sam says, whatever the Switch ends up being called, it will be a fantastic system that is woefully unsupported by third parties. Hopefully Nintendo will support it for a long time. Now, asterisk, Sam, that was what I was going to say for my prediction. I'm pretty worried for the safety of the Switch and its third-party support as well. Anyway, moving on. Nier Automata will be awesome, but the PC version will have an excruciating wait after the PS4 version comes out, even if it's only a few days or weeks.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that you are pretty sound in your predictions there, Sam. We should just call you Miss Cleo from now on. Which is kind of weird. I mean, because Sam's bald and got a beard. I mean, like...
Clearly, you've never seen Miss Cleo off air.
She has a chin cap.
A what?
A chin cap, like a bald cap. Oh, for okay. Chin.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. That first one isn't going too far onto a limb, but I forgot even that Nier Automata was getting a PC version, and it makes sense that it would get the short end of the stick. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Ben, what does David say?
David says, people will continue to be VR crazy. Console wars will keep going and still be dumb. Switch will be fun, but extremely difficult to get one. From Software will launch their exciting new MMO world of Soulscraft.
I hope not. I don't want to cover an MMO for the show. yeah, there's a lot there. I don't know about the VR. It'll happen. It's just going to be kind of picked up by like mainstream marketing shit.
I was going to say marketers are interested in it. So that guarantees it'll happen.
Branded experiences and tours and stuff.
Someone sold it well enough to convince marketers that it was going to be a thing. And now it's a thing, whether we like it or not. Ugh.
Gross. Yeah. We'll talk about
that
off air.
Marketers.
I only benefit from a marketing company. I don't actually do marketing myself. let's see. Dennis, what does Stuart say?
Stuart says the second Dark Souls 3 DLC will not answer the questions you want answered.
Yeah. I had a dream about the second DLC today. I think it's because by today, I mean, right before the show went on the air, I think it's because I've been playing a lot of Dishonored 2, and then just all of a sudden it was about witches. The Dark Souls 2 DLC 3 DLC was about witches, which is not out of line because it might be about Londor, maybe, although man, probably not. I don't know.
You never know. Side note, which you're welcome to cut, but I had a dream that Trump ordered the bombing of Russian civilians and woke up to the sad realization that the adjective was less probable than the noun.
Oh god, that is so sad.
Yeah. Wow.
That
was a tweet that I wrote up, and then I was like, I don't have the energy to say that.
Why would you open yourself up to that?
Why would I project that negativity? But anyway, so that was lurking in my subconscious.
Yeah. Let's see here. Graham writes, I'm expecting good things for games in 2017. Persona 5 is coming out, and I'm confident it'll become a new favorite. There are other titles that I'm excited about, like Night in the Woods, and the Final Fantasy XII remaster. Speaking of Final Fantasy, Final Fantasy 15 is supposed to get some updates and DLC, so I'll keep an ear open on how that plays out.
Yeah. It's crazy to think that people have kind of chewed through Final Fantasy 15 already and have like expended its content.
Yeah. That's the way it works. That's how it works. Yeah. I think that Persona 5 is going to get one more delay. I think it's only going to be like 2 weeks, but I think that there's going to be something that happens that makes everybody even more sad. I'm not going to make that my official my official prediction, just because I might think of something better and also less mean. But yeah. Jala, what does Jonathan say?
Jonathan says, I will reach a decade since I last bought a console, only a few months to go. The Switch won't change the game, and taking it to parties will be shown to be a bad idea.
Man, somebody's going to do that. Just like somebody carried their GameCube around by the handle, somebody's going to take their Switch to a place where to a third location with people, and it's going to be very upsetting.
I maintain. So we talked in years past about like what change we really want to see, and I maintain that like super easy wireless hookup of console to TV is something that I want, and I could see it bringing back just a golden era of couch co-op where you bring your GameCube by the handle or your whatever, and you just set it in the same room, and you don't have to go fumbling around with a ton of cables, but you can bring up then, you know, the Jackbox Party Pack or whatever on anyone's TV. Yeah. I want that so bad. I think that's something where people aren't articulating that they want that, but that if you, mm-hmm. if you gave it to them, they'd be really, really happy with it.
See, we're going to get that, but like the shitty version is kind of already here, which is smart TVs that accept video output from or wireless video output from phones.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's
a half step.
That is the most, the most likely just weird inertia point for this stuff.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there's like Amazon Echo that plugs in everything and Google Home that plugs in everything with Chromecast. Yeah. But the problem is there's like six of them. Mm-hmm. And so you're never going to have the right one connecting to the right one. And
yeah, it's a,
so it will remain fragmented.
It's a land grab problem. Yeah.
Yep.
Let's see. Ben, what does Michael say?
Michael says, I think we're going to see lots of VR games. I'm also hoping the success of indie games in recent days will lead developers to lean less on graphic fidelity. I'd love to see more games that are simple in presentation and highly in-depth mechanically.
I kind of wonder if it, like AAA is always going to use its graphical lushness as a differentiator to like make people feel comfortable about paying $60.
You got to make your developers work overtime for something, right?
Right.
I mean, you have to. I mean, it's just a fact of life.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah, I don't know if I have anything more to add about that. Dennis, what does Eric say?
Eric says there will be a new Doom game. It will be really good, and Bethesda will make it have really good multiplayer this time, which I believe was like the one mark against the Doom game from this year or from last year.
Yeah. Man, I
here's hoping.
I hear amazing things about that Doom game. I like ordered a copy of it on Amazon when it was on sale, and that was on the 28th. Apparently, so many people flooded that it just didn't like they're still out. Like they still haven't shipped my copy.
Eh. Wow, that's incredible. Like, yeah, it's I have it, and it's at the top of my list to play after I finish Dark Souls 3.
Hmm. Cool. I imagine that's hard to do with a lot of kids in the house.
Danny, you know, so I'll get to it sometime in 2020.
Daddy, do jaws come off that easy? No, son. No. No.
No. No, see, with Milo, who's 8 months, I can play whatever I want with him because he's too young to know.
Right.
So I just got to worry about getting Luke out of the room. And then Milo will just take a nice little nap on me while I game. And that is primo snuggles and primo gaming right there.
Very nice. Let's see here. Sid writes, hardware is going to push for more quasi-console PCs and mini gaming PCs. Also a deluge of articles and videos along the lines of, I can't believe I passed over this great game from 2016.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a thing.
2016 has been a good year for games. Like a lot of good stuff came out in 2016.
Only for games.
Right, yeah. Jala, what does Jason say?
Jason says, there will be hype. There will be disappointment. It's very vague, and it's awesome. It's totally like, yeah, it's totally like the horoscope that you read in the daily newspaper kind of thing. Awesome. Good job.
2017, like, pre-order of the year.
Oh, no.
Well, and then, too, it's just got the ellipses and everything. It's great.
Sky blue, earth spin. And Ben, round us out with Mikhail.
Mikhail says, I would expect an increase in overtly political game themes, but perhaps not in huge budget games until 2018. You've already seen a lot of that this year in big games, and I'm guessing that it'll become increasingly mainstream as creators look for vehicles to express thoughts and emotions about the current political climate. I would also expect some kind of equivalent backlash from the red pill fedora lords who will feel like having other people's existences being acknowledged meaningfully being acknowledged meaningfully games is an assault on other assault upon their own existence. We're ripe for another Gamergate scale cultural conflagration. Hopefully not. Who knows?
Guess what? It happened. It was the Trump campaign. Like, yeah. That's just the way the world is now. Gamer, somebody wrote an article. We referenced it on a different show. I think it was Matt Lees wrote an article saying, like, yeah, Gamergate was a trial run for this fucking sewer to open up and spill out into the body of the world.
Yeah, Mikhail's was basically a long-winded way to predict that we're going to have hatred too sometime in 2017.
Yeah. Yeah, no. I wish these people would stop trying to cram their agenda down our throat.
Hey, just drown out the bad stuff with good stuff.
Stick to games. Yeah. Yeah. No, it's going to happen. It'll be good. Like, it's already happening in television, movies, stuff like that.
I think it's interesting because there's this weird game of chicken where by the time any AAA, you know, studio can wind up to do something overtly political, I think the politics fatigue will have become so great that the appetite for that will greatly decrease.
Yeah, as people settle into, like, it's just normal. Like, I need to go to my job while I still have it kind of stuff.
Yeah, I get burnt out.
Yeah. So let's do ours. Thank you, everybody, for writing those in. I don't know that I really have anything. Like, I think that the most likely thing to happen is that neither the PlayStation 4 Pro nor the Xbox Scorpio or whatever are going to have a tremendous amount of success. I think that the weird half step in console generations is going to be kind of it's going to have a deleterious effect as people just kind of get confused about this, and it's going to kind of like reduce confidence in something that otherwise was just kind of, you know, stable. I continue to be skeptical that those are good moves, and I don't think that the market is going to get behind them as much as I am qualified to say anything about that.
Sure.
Yeah. Jala, how about you?
Well, I already said my thing about the Switch, but also I'm guessing that Sony will keep being the biggest deal in the VR world, as I don't really see the Oculus or the Vive whipping out enough to pull into the lead.
Mm-hmm. So is PlayStation currently in the lead?
They have the broadest category, like the largest number of titles and things like that, the biggest library. Yeah. And everything. So I would say that, yeah, they are, that Sony's probably kicking it in that regard. That is my impression from the things that I see. Perhaps it is wrong. Perhaps someone is beating their steering wheel at this very moment. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
But yeah. Also, we'll probably see more about mobile VR and VR adapted stuff. Like, there's already a bunch of, you know, music videos and whatever the hell else all being tossed into VR and having VR versions and part of it being VR. So that's going to keep being a thing.
Yeah. VR branded experiences. Yeah. Well, Oculus is whipping out plenty of stuff, but most of that is executive dicks while they're chatting with 15-year-olds.
Oh God.
Goodness.
Yeah.
Oh boy. Well,
that one came out of left field.
Yeah. Well, it happens. Like, it's a thing.
Yeah.
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 At first I thought you were being crass, but then I realized you were just speaking about things that have happened in this world.
Like, I was crassly speaking truth. which is the only way to do it. South Park, am I right? Ben, how about you? Well, what's in your crystal ball?
I predict that somebody on the podcast will get a VR by the end of this year. Don't know who. I predict that The Last of Us Part 2 will not come out this year, but a release date will come out this year. And I predict that I'll still be playing Rocket League by the end of this year.
Nice.
You know, predictions you can control don't count.
Yeah, right. Like,
you can thumb that scale. Like mm-hmm. it'll happen.
Hey, same thing with buying a VR set, though.
Yeah, I suppose.
It's true.
Oh, and Dennis.
Once you get better predictions, Ben. No, mine is a two-sided blade. So first off, I think that the diversity and specifically gender and race representation in games is going to get a lot better. over the next year, just, you know, with Overwatch kind of making some of the strides and putting stakes in the ground like they have. I think a lot of people will follow suit. And also, I think someone is going to do it really incredibly embarrassingly bad. Just in terms of, like, there will be, like, some kind of gender slider in a game character creation menu or something like that.
That's already happened in Saints Row 2, and people really enjoy that because, yeah.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah,
there's a gender slider?
Yeah, there is. It changes kind of just, like, certain body proportion kind of things. No, it's actually a good thing just because it does kind of reflect a non-binary. Like, that is a positive and good thing.
Yeah, my point is someone will try to kind of jump in and be progressive in a way that's just kind of horribly off tone.
Yeah, yeah.
Or horribly tone deaf.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's growing pains, right?
So wait, did they take the gender slider out in subsequent Saints Row games?
Yes, they did, just because of the way they rigged the models. Stuff like that, but they still gave you the ability to have male or female voices on whatever sex of character you wanted. So you could have a male character with a female voice or a female character with a male voice.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm imagining a game where you can put points into gayness or something like that. I'm looking for that level of bad.
Yeah, that level of just kind of misguided.
Yeah.
What were you going to say, Jala?
I was just going to say that I was actually discussing the Saints Row 2 character generation options with Sam because we were discussing boob sliders in general. thanks to a podcast that I'm going to be on with Jenny Palladna. So you can look for that. Jenny Palladna's doing a boob slider podcast about video game girl characters, and I'm on the first episode talking about Portal. I don't know when it's out yet, though, so... Don't look too hard yet.
Yeah.
but anyway, so because of that, I was having a conversation with Sam about, you know, just boob sliders and other character generation stuff in general. And we were looking at, like, some mods for Saints Row and stuff. And Sam was commenting about how Saints Row 2 did have so many different options, and then they cut back on those on the subsequent games. So.
I... Two steps forward, one step back, I think, is the way that is going to go. And some of those steps back are just going to be because of backlash, which is just shitty. But
yeah.
Cool. Well, thank you, everybody, for writing in. If you want to participate in more of these in the future, go to facebook.com/thelevelpodcast and look for those prompts to go up on Tuesday afternoons. This time, thanks to Dennis. Dennis was the one who put that up. But sometimes Jala does this as well.
Actually, the question was my suggestion.
Oh, okay.
It was a team effort.
There we go.
So, yeah.
Alley-oop. The grind. Now it is time for the grind, where we talk about the games we've been playing over the past week or so. Jala, it's been the longest since you've been here, so I'm going to start with you.
Sure. I played a little bit of a lot of different stuff. So first things first, I beat Ghost Trick. So that was cool.
Oh, yeah.
I enjoyed the entirety of that game. There wasn't a point where it sagged, dipped, or did any weird shit. But my one major comment about the end of the game, just to let you know my opinion, Cole, ain't nobody's legs gonna be okay at the end of this game. Ain't nobody's legs gonna be okay. Everybody's gonna be in a fucking wheelchair.
Yeah.
Okay. That is all I got to say about that. Nobody else.
I forget what happens to the legs. Most of my knowledge about the end of the game goes into the twist, which I think is cool and good. But
well, I will message you directly after the show to tell you the details about why ain't nobody's legs going to be okay.
No legs. No legs are left. No legs are left.
Like these people. All right. So that's the thing. All right. Also, in Steins Gate, I actually started it up again. And remember, I had started it up sort of, but then my Vita died and then I didn't get back to it. Yep. And then I loaded it back up, but then I started playing something else, which I'll talk about. And then anyway, I finally got back to Steins Gate because I just didn't feel like working too hard at a video game, but I wanted to play something. So
right.
I just got to the point where the new stuff happens, so I have nothing to report other than the fact that I have saved the game in three separate slots in Chapter 6, so I don't have to do this shit again.
Yep.
And so that's a thing. That's all I got to say. Now I've got it set up where I can speed go through the next several to see the rest of the endings and what. So I really don't have anything. There's nothing fresh yet.
Which I forget which character's ending is the one after the girl downstairs.
I have no idea. I'll find out when I get there.
I thought that you had gotten to
I had gotten the one ending for Suzuha and that's it. And I have not gotten anything else, so I ain't got nothing else to say about that, just that I'm playing it again and I'm to the point that the next time I'm on the show I should probably have something to say. Mm-hmm. When I wasn't playing Steins Gate, I loaded up my Vita and I was like, I'm going to play Steins Gate. Actually, no, I'm going to play Castlevania the Dracula X Chronicles because that's so similar. Mm-hmm. So, I don't know. I started playing that and mostly I had a lot of fun snarking on Instagram and Twitter as usual about, you know, what I'm playing on my Vita and, you know, having little commentary about how Richter, he walks very, very slowly and with purpose. He likes to strut and he is not hurry. Like, it's just not everything else, like the fucking zombies are power walking. All right, they are zooming across the damn screen like nobody's business. They could probably outrun me and, you know, homie is just like, whatever.
Can I suggest an Instagram video for you?
Sure.
Just capture a video of Richter kind of walking with purpose a little bit, and then overlay Saturday Night Fever under it. I think that's the way to go.
Well, and then it makes me laugh because homie has like this big cross on his back that has like the fucking studs around it and shit. It just reminds me of like the rhinestone covered crosses and crap that you see at like the Houston Rodeo. And so like I just couldn't get that image out of my head and I was just like, oh my god, he's a cowboy, he even got a whip, you know. So like I ended up finishing playing that and then like pulling out my sketchbook and sketching dude with a cowboy hat on. So like that's in places that you can find it. It's actually the main image on my website right now. Like if you pull up my website, the scroll you know, image slider, you know, slideshow thing at the top has that right now. So anyway, so that's the thing that I did. And I've only played like two or three levels. It's not like I've gotten very far, but I did play it until I passed out that night. So that was fun. I was laughing about how he may not believe in the benefits of cardiovascular exercise, but he does believe in wall meat.
Oh yeah. I mean, and that is the most nutritious of the meats. It is the most nutritious cut of meat.
What is wall meat?
It's a wonderful thing from Castlevania.
Okay.
Like in Castlevania, you can hit walls, and every once in a while, there's like free shit, you know, like extra shit in there that you didn't know that was in there, like hearts or your meter, or you can also get meat in walls.
It's the
or it's wall meat.
It's the best way to fill up your health. Somebody has traveled there before you and then just kind of stashed their lunch away. Some kind of squirrel man.
Well, lifestyles of the rich and famous, I guess, maybe.
Well, I actually have a little bit of a story because I have this like running weird conglomeration of video games in my head, and like the Jala world of games in my head is all kinds of special. So I played some more Dishonored 2. That's the last thing I played.
Okay.
I have been making fashionable mounds of bodies in every location possible. Lots of piles of bodies. Now, let it be known that I'm not actually killing people, not for the most part. I am mostly just knocking them out. I'm doing a nonviolent, very, very aggressive assault run.
Okay.
I take everybody out. Like, I sneak up on everyone and knock them out and then put them in a pile somewhere.
Yeah.
And so as I complete the level, like, I take every single person out. So that way when I'm leaving the level later, I don't have any problems. It's no big deal. I can just, like, waltz out. No big deal. Cool. So makes it real easy to leave the level. It makes it real fun because my version of stealth is just sneaking up on these people and just, like, you know, everybody, every single person, citizens or whatever, everyone goes down.
Bum 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 bum. Yeah.
So anyway, I'm finally starting to use Emily's other powers and stuff, which is great. I'm having fun with them now that I'm using them. Mm-hmm. And so far, I am currently in the middle of mission number 8. I have not gotten back to it yet because I have been busy with marathon prep stuff. So
Yeah,
so I will finish it. I really hope to finish it, but it's probably not going to be until sometime next week mm-hmm. when I am dead from the marathon. So
yeah.
Mission number 4 and mission number 7 are still, like, so far, they are my favorite missions. And people who have played the game, it is the Clockwork Mansion and A Crack in the Slab. They yes. both do very interesting things that make lots of fun things happen. Yeah. So anyway, you can see lots of screenshots of all the body piles that I make. I put them in places on Twitter and on my Instagram specifically. But how this plays into what I was talking about earlier is that I was like, I'm making mounds of bodies. It's like body walls. Hey, that's where the wall meat came from. Emily is just going around and like knocking all these putting them in places, and then later on Richter finds them, and that's what he's eating. He's a crazy cannibal cowboy.
Oh no.
So
yeah, like the so wall, like the wall meat looks like ham shanks, like it could be some yeah. long pig. Yeah,
right. So so like in the rolling story of video games that's in my head, like that's what's happening. So
I mean yeah. If it's sat for a long enough time, it's no longer really human.
Okay. You're channeling like the Walking mm. Dead yeah video games. So
yeah, so I'm just now getting to mission 7, just now getting to the crack in the slab.
Ooh, you have fun with that. It's
yeah
great.
Like the premise of it looks really cool. I don't want to reveal too much about it just because the game is so new. I felt more comfortable talking about the Clockwork Mansion last time.
Yeah. Well, let's just say that it introduces a new mechanic that mm-hmm. you only have in that one particular mission, and
yeah,
it's
yeah.
cool. Yeah, yeah, it's very cool.
Yeah, I'm into it. Way yeah, into yeah. it. Yeah.
It's very fun.
And that is literally all I've been playing, trying to get it up to speed. I had some family in town this past weekend, so all of my hopes to get further and play something else was we're dashed against the rocks. So
that's okay. So how has your Dishonored been going?
It's been going good. I think that in general, like the highs are very high, but both mm-hmm. the story and like a little bit of like the mechanic and setting stuff is more slight than I want it to be compared to kind of like the high regard that I hold. Yeah. A lot of that stuff, you know, from Dishonored 1.
Yeah, I agree with that. They do introduce some really awesome things that, like, not story-wise, just purely mechanic-wise, that are really fun and really give you new verbs and give you a new way of looking at the game. And I like that quite a bit, but there's saggy parts for sure, at least for me. I mean, it's not that they're super saggy. They're not like so bad that I'm like, man, this is such a slog. It's not that kind of bad, but it's just less good. It's not as exciting as I would have hoped.
They're like uneventful missions is the thing. Yeah. Like that just like doesn't happen. Like chapter 6, like the Dust District that has a very cool gimmick that you can probably discern from the name of the level. I kind of just like ran through. I'm like, oh, that's it. Like it
yeah,
is.
Yeah, I was like, okay, there's nothing really to grab your attention story beat wise that's gonna, you know, just like go, man, that was a memorable mission that I feel like I've accomplished. I don't feel like I accomplished anything in that mission. Like I don't even remember what the point of that mission. Oh, wait, now I think I remember what it is, you know?
But I mean, like, yeah, it took a little bit, but like my point being that there are missions in 2, like where the entirety of the mission is like the first half of the mission from 1, you know, like in the city district, getting from like 1, you know, getting across it, you know, and like everything about it is fine. I'm not saying like, oh, they got lazy or whatever, but it's like, you know, the mission unit, I'm kind of accustomed to a very particular kind of rise and fall, a particular arc for it. And like, there are just times where it just doesn't deliver on that, you know?
Yeah. Well, especially when I was going through 6 and 7, I felt like, okay, so like, They just extended one mission into two missions they did. Okay. You know, I was kind of like, that's unsatisfying, but you know, it wasn't so bad that, you know, whatever. Like I liked, because of the way I play, in mission number six, I was going, first I went to one area where the Howlers were, and then I went to where the Overseers were, mm-hmm. and I was just spying on everybody, taking everybody out, listening to what they were talking about and shit. And so, like, I got to see everything that was going on and how, you know, what you think about the characters at first glance is not necessarily what, you know, the whole picture, it, really.
Right, right.
And I like that aspect of it, that it gives you, I guess, kind of a redeeming or a corrupting influence for, you know, what your predisposition was to think about them. Like, oh, this person has got to be like this because he's typecast, you know,
yeah,
or whatnot.
Yeah.
So.
Because of the crowd they roll with. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I'm looking forward. So I'm going to, you know, because I'm playing this for the show. I'm going to be like, I'm going to immediately start a Corvo High Chaos run. And I'm really looking forward to that. Just because I want to become
bring out the rats.
Yeah, yeah. Like I want to be like this crazy Rat King man.
Bloodfly King at this point in this game.
I think he still controls rats. I think that he's.
Oh, does he? Okay.
Yeah, he still has like that particular aspect of the outsider.
Yeah, but if it's high chaos, that makes more bloodflies, right?
I don't know.
That's how that works.
Yeah, maybe.
So. Oh well.
The bloodflies continue to be pretty great, actually. In a way that
great.
They...
You didn't like them before.
Oh no, I hate them. They really get under my skin.
Was that a joke?
Maybe. No, they're great. But by which I mean they're effective. Like so something is introduced. At least I found it in chapter six about the way that certain people relate to the blood flies. That is very good and cool. And again, plays for very effective horror. So like that aspect of it is fine. I'm kind of down with basically them taking these abandoned houses and turning them into little horror shows that you can clear by going around and killing the nests. Like, I think that is, that is good.
Yeah. Oh, and another comment that I have to say, about Dishonored, that's kind of, I guess oblique. Okay, I understand that the witches come in later on because of, you know, your main antagonist and whatever, but it's kind of stupid to me that the dogs only come in later on at the same time that the witches come in. Like, they have to come together, or they don't come at all. They don't show up at all. That's just, eh. Like, that doesn't make any sense to me. Like, dogs would probably be pretty pervasive type things if people had them, you know, like...
Yeah, yeah.
You know, that's just kind of silly. And I understand part of that is probably because they throw a little bit of a wrench into the learning curve, I guess, because they behave differently. But, you know, I don't know.
Yeah.
Grump.
Grump. Yeah. I still have my mind open about it. I just wish there wasn't that kind of dead space, you know.
I'm just like holding my breath because I really hope the end of the game is the exciting part, like missions 4 and 7, rather than the lower part, like where it's not bad, but it's just not as exciting as I would hope. We'll see.
I'm just worried it's going to be a similar thing where it's like mission 8 is the big the big infiltration, and then mission 9 is like the self-contained, you know, decide what to do about Delilah thing.
Yeah. I don't know.
How many missions are there?
Nine.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's about the right length for a game for, you know, like this for me.
Yeah.
You know,
it's the right length. I just think that it's weird that they stretched out some parts, and I understand they wanted to do some certain things, but they really could have just mashed the level and made it a little bit shorter, you know, like made mission 6 a little bit shorter of a distance and still covered the same ground and then moved on to the next part and just made it really a convoluted or complicated chapter.
Yeah.
So
it's a pacing problem more than anything.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So Ben, how about you? What you got?
All right. Let's start with some non-conventional things first. I started watching videos from the Game Developers Conference. I don't know if they were put up recently or not, but there's a whole bunch of videos on YouTube for game GDC over the years. And it's basically just people talking about making games. So the one in particular that I watched was Inside. They had a video of like their graphics pipeline and how they did animations for the game, which was really interesting. Yeah. And then kind of went down a rabbit hole with that and saw also like how Jonathan Blow did the rewind mechanic in Braid, which was also very interesting as well.
Yeah. Can you give some high level summaries on either of those? Share the wealth, man.
Yeah. So the way he did the rewind mechanic in Braid is he literally saved every frame that was played as you were playing the game. And then basically he shifted the problem over for basically how to compress that data and keep it a manageable size and how to be able to like get it when you need it when you're rewinding. And one of the restrictions then is because he did that, certain levels, I don't know if he enforces a time limit upon it or not, but he only has a certain amount of memory allocated to this rewind feature.
Yeah.
So depending on the complexity of a level, you can only play it for 30 or 60 minutes before you just run out of memory. And so either I think the map might reset or he starts throwing stuff away and you can only rewind so far, something like that. Mm-hmm. But that made me think of immediately of the cloud mechanic because there's the one level in Braid.
Yeah.
Exactly. So I think that that's all in one of the simpler levels, like one of the beginning levels. And it's probably because there's not a lot going on in the level so that he can actually record 60 minutes of playtime so that you can rewind it.
And it just like weirdly compress away. Like I can't imagine he's just grabbing like the frame buffer or something like that. Cause that's
it's
a high def game.
it's basically grabbing like where your character is, like what objects are initialized. He knows certain things are fixed, so he knows like for example the map is fixed and unchanging, so he doesn't need to like he doesn't need to worry about compressing that or shifting that. So it's mostly just your state and the enemy's state and where that sort of thing is. So it was pretty interesting. So that's an aside thing. So, but if you go on YouTube and look for GDC talks or whatever, there's a lot of really cool ones. Anyway, games that I've been playing. Rocket League Darkest Dungeon. Still playing those. Still good. the new game that I started playing this week, which is on my backlog, is I started playing Doom.
Doom. The shooter.
Yeah.
Yeah, I should have said so earlier.
Yeah. Well, sorry. Things at Doom and you do that a lot and that happens a lot. It's a very pretty game. The music's really good. The presentation's really solid. The puzzles are okay. You just shoot a lot though. So like I've played it for maybe a couple hours or so. I don't know how many hours. Go ahead.
Are you playing this on PC or PC. PS4? Okay, PC.
Yeah, I'm playing on PC. I only think I've played a handful of hours, so maybe like 3 or 4 or something like that. But it looks like a really pretty game. It's very polished. But I think the mechanic maybe it'll develop some more, but like running into a room, having enemies run at you and shooting them and like doing that over and over again gets monotonous pretty quick.
It's about like the pacing, right? Like the exchange of your ranged ammo for your short range ammo and kind of like managing that as it goes. You seeing that to be true?
Well, so right now it's like you have 3 different guns. You have a pistol that's like infinite ammo. You have a shotgun and assault rifle sort of thing. They all have secondary fires that you can use. Usually it's like use your pistol unless you're in a bind and then you can use your shotguns and assault rifles if it's a bigger enemy or something like that. The one weird thing that they invested a lot of time in is they have like death animations for each character and they have like multiple different ones. So kind of like think of like what they did with Gears of War with like the chainsaw animation when you murder somebody. They have that with everyone and they have multiple ones. So like you might rip off someone's head or you might punch them really hard and then they die or something. Yeah. I don't know. So one of the mechanics of the game is there's like a stutter animation that they have and it highlights in like yellow blue to beat you over the head to let you know that they're in this state. Where you can melee them and like take them down. The one cost to it is while this animation is playing or whatever, other people can still run up to you and like hit you. So You have to make sure that the person's like relatively clear if you want to do it, but it also gives you health back. And so I think one of the mechanics of the game is constantly managing your health to make sure that you're not about to die. So,
right.
Yeah, that's, you know, you do that in most games. That's not too terribly new. Mm-hmm. But your health definitely, like, it's kind of like a sine wave as you're going through a room and shooting things, you know?
Yeah.
Like, you'll get shot a whole bunch and then you have to start doing death animations to get your health back up a little bit and repeat. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I don't know. I'll probably keep playing it. Again, it's a really pretty game, so, I mean, it's not unattractive to look at and play, so...
How about variety in the color palettes? Like, is it all Hellscape stuff, or...?
It kind of varies. I mean, I've only been on, like, one part of the map, so it's, like, hellish outside, and it's, like, dark gray factory, like, mechanical sort of thing inside. So those are the two main scapes that I've seen so far. So I haven't seen too much variance from that.
Sounds doomy to me.
Yeah. Yeah, indeed. I mean, so to that end, it does seem like it's very, very true to the original spirit of the game, I guess, and just trying to be an updated version of that. I mean, there are like upgrade mechanics and stuff. So, I mean, there is, you know, semi-modern game design in it that they've tried to apply to it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know. It's not bad. I mean, if you were to pick this game up for like $15 or $20, I think it would be totally worthwhile. So,
yeah. Are the kind of like story logs sticking out to you? Like the, weird little,
absolutely
kind of side things? No? Okay.
No, it's, I mean, it's almost exactly like, Dead Space or something. It's like you'll have people on a terminal, just talking to you about what you need to do, kind of. Yeah. I guess there was one moment of humor, how like there's an alarm going off for when there's like demon presence, and it's weird that a facility would have that
it's
sort
a demon
of thing.
Alarm.
Yeah, like, oh, we're in
that's
the middle
right next
of a demon
to our
invasion.
CO2 alarm.
Yeah, exactly.
It's our
yeah.
DO2 alarm for demon outside.
We got a good deal, so we got both of them. So, yeah, I don't know. So some of I think they kind of take the tone of the story kind of tongue in cheek. So. It's nice that they're self-aware about that. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Nice.
Yep. That's all I got.
Yeah. Doomed.
Awesome.
Dennis, how about you?
Yeah, I'm really sad that I don't have David on to talk about this, but I've been playing a lot of Vermintide over the past week.
Yeah.
What is that?
It's insanely fun. It is essentially a melee Left 4 Dead. Are you familiar at all with Left 4 Dead, Ben? I can't remember if you played that or not.
Yeah, I have Left 4 Dead 2.
Yeah, so think that only you are like an axe-wielding dwarf instead of an accountant with a handgun. And you've got Vermintide. Instead of zombies, you're being swarmed by rats. But the same kind of loop of four-player co-op, fighting off swarms of enemies while you try to get from point A to point B and complete objectives along the way, all holds true. It's from the first person perspective, which I didn't expect to work that great with melee combat. I haven't really played Skyrim, so I can't pull from that as I think about how to or not to do that kind of combat, but I think they handle it pretty well. There seems to be some element of auto lock on in terms of your swing and enemies. You know, if you kind of click on an enemy ish when you're swinging, it will make sure that the impact, you know, hits them in a certain way. And they invest a lot into making the death animations for the enemies, speaking of death animations, line up with where and how you hit them, which is kind of cool. It has the negative effect, though, and I think this is kind of intentional, that when you're fighting through this horde of rats that's swarming you, you knock one guy's arm off and he's going to fall down dead, but there's this whole animation about him grabbing his arm and flailing around. Which means he's on your screen and he's a body that's kind of in the way for a couple more seconds.
Yeah.
And so I've definitely, you know, really given some rats a bad day where like thunk off one arm, turn and hit another guy, turn around, thunk off another arm, turn and hit another guy, and then just turn around and decapitate the rat with no arms.
Uh-huh.
It's like, sorry, dude, you shouldn't be still standing here. I'm going to keep on hitting you until you're out of my way. But at the same time, that feels really good when you like kick down a door, hit one guy, hit a second guy, hit a third guy, bash another guy with your shield. Like It's very kinetic in that sense, which I really like. That's the other big thing, is blocking with your shield or just with your weapon. If you don't have a shield, you have a certain number of points of armor, and if you block at the right time, it, you know, makes sense, you can absorb attacks. And then if you attack while you're blocking, you can knock enemies back. And so specifically with the character that I'm playing, which is a dwarf, a lot is built around using your shield to kind of crowd control, while some of the more damage dealing characters will actually take people out. So, you know, I'm absorbing attacks, I'm knocking people down, and then, you know, the different characters behind me are actually taking people out. But it plays, again, it feels very, very reminiscent of Left 4 Dead. It has the added benefit of having a loot system at the end. So based on the items that you find and how well you do during a mission, you roll different loot, which could be armor, it could be weapons, sidearms, and trinkets at the end of every mission. And you also get stuff when you level up your character. Right now, they kind of all have minor benefits. So like I've got a crossbow that has a 8.5% chance to split into two arrows when you fire and basically do double damage. But I know there are crazier and more interesting things that you get as you get rarer and rarer loot.
Yeah.
Like I said, almost every time I've played either with David or with another friend, and it's fantastic fun, just like Left 4 Dead 2 was.
Yay!
Is there a story to this? Like, is it like post-apocalyptic? Is there some kind of here like disaster or catastrophe that happened here?
The answer is yes, and it's incredibly deep because it's set in the Warhammer universe.
Oh boy, didn't see that coming. So Warhammer, the End Times, Vermintide. For the purposes of the notes, I'm just going to say Vermintide because I do not know how to handle the colons in that title.
Yeah.
Oh wait, no, there's one colon. Sorry.
Yep.
Cole can't take.
Yeah,
the colon.
So it is.
Oh no.
It is in the Warhammer universe, which means there is oodles and oodles of lore. Interestingly, lots of stuff in the item descriptions that I've seen so far, a la Dark Souls. But that might just be for like the base trinket items. I don't know if they actually keep up that level of detail in other loot items that drop. But then I think there's a whole like appendix or wiki or what have you, where, you know, every single person and item and race that's represented has just volumes written about it, if not specifically for this game, then just for the Warhammer universe in general.
Right,
which is fun. I've really, really liked, and this was a high point in Left 4 Dead 2 as well, the voiced character interactions as you go through a level. Mm-hmm. That seems to be a very deep reservoir. I'm starting to hear repeats, but for example, we were running along the rooftops and my character just starts bursting out in a dwarven drinking song. It's a beautiful night. What? I feel like singing. They're like, oh, come on. You know, like, be serious. He's like, hey, it's all going to shit anyway. I might as well have some fun. Like, how many beers have you had tonight?
Whatever
before
I found.
After we started.
Yeah.
So it's just really fun exchanges like that. Huh. And, you know, there's like a witch hunter that's kind of this, you know, snob. And there's actually a witch as well. So them playing together is interesting. The rogue elf character refers to everyone else as lumberfoots, et cetera. So dripping in personality, I think it could stand to have a few more enemy types, because it very much has, there's like your bog standard rats, slightly upgraded versions, swarm rats, and then a couple specials, a la like the smoker or whatever from Left 4 Dead. And I feel like I've seen all the enemy types already.
Yeah. When you're saying rats, you're not talking about like dishonored rats where they're low to the ground. Like, these are were-rats, right?
People rats. Like, yeah, there's a name for the Rathaki or something like that.
Yeah, I don't need your letters.
I'm pretty sure there's at least a couple of apostrophes in there.
Right.
They might as well be zombies. Like, at the point when there's like 60 of them on screen all swarming you, it doesn't matter exactly what they are. It doesn't matter that they have big round ears.
Wow. Right.
They're gibberlings.
Oh yeah. Good pull.
Yeah.
I listened to things.
Super Yeah, I had no idea this game existed. Like, it is good to hear that some other studio is picking up where Left 4 Dead left off.
Yeah, absolutely. It was $10 on sale recently. I think it's like $25 standard. I was a little bit disappointed in that there's already, I think this is a relatively recent release, and there's already a bunch of DLC packs that you have to pay for to get.
Oh, yeah.
So I feel like there are pieces of the game that I'm being cut off from already. Yeah. Although with the fun I've been having with it, if I can find a good group of friends that plays this regularly, I don't think it would be a ripoff to shell out for them. But you know, they're $8 DLC packs for a $25 game, and that adds up.
Yeah.
That's my bitterness with Street Fighter V, because like I wanted to get it on the Steam sale, but then to actually get, you know, all the actual characters and whatnot is like fucking $50 even after the sales and stuff, because they're just like insane, and like all the DLC is super expensive. It's stupid.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, versus the alternative of it not existing, obviously I'd rather have the DLC, but you know, versus the alternative of it being free, there's a lot of room for improvement.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't know about this game either until David started going, "You should get Vermintide. You should get Vermintide." And then he just gave me Vermintide. So thank you, David. Not that he ever listens to the podcast, but thank you anyway.
Yeah.
So. Yeah. No, this good.
Yeah, I was gonna say. So I if you like that kind of game, if you like Left 4 Dead, get this game. Like it will scratch that same itch.
That is that is a high recommendation.
Mm-hmm.
It is.
Yeah.
I played a lot of
Left 4 Dead. Game. And so after playing it, I need to cool down, and like I've had a couple times where either playing that or Dark Souls 3 or something else, it's like it just feels like I'm too hyped up to go to bed on that note. Which brings me to the other game I've been playing, Mini Metro.
Yeah. I'm just going to relax with one of the most stressful sim games that exists. Not like a sim, it's like a puzzle game with a lot of time pressure associated with it.
It is a infrastructure simulator. And I think if you go into it with the right mindset, for me, it's been very peaceful. So like I said, I think I mentioned it last week, but didn't talk about it in depth. It's basically a puzzle game where you are connecting, different shaped stops. So like circle, square, triangle, with different colored lines that subway or, you know, metro trams run on, mm-hmm. hence the name of the game. Slowly more stops will pop up with different shapes or repeats of the same shape. And people will pop up at those stations all wanting to go to a different place. So if you see a triangle marker on a circle station, there's someone at that station who wants to go from circle to triangle. The entire idea is just kind of keeping that whole system running as the stops get more complicated and more people start running through your system by erecting an ever more complicated network of metro tunnels and train tracks and everything.
I think Jala's going to explode if she doesn't get to cut in. Yeah.
Go ahead.
I need to know, are there violent and hateful crashes of death and destruction? Do people like get caught on fire?
this is exclusively like a very happy, mellow musical game because everything has a note attached to it.
Mm-hmm.
A note. Okay, well then that is very happy and musical and peaceful. But then again, like as to like Cole's like, oh, so you're just gonna stress yourself out with this game that has, you know, puzzle elements and then time restrictions. It's kind of like how I play Puzzle Juice to chill out, you know, but I can play that game for like hours. So, you know, it's the same principle theoretically.
Yeah. But it's great. Like a car moving along the track generates just kind of an elongated synth tone. Someone getting on or off creates a little boom. And, you know, that different stops really appearing are more of like a... Oh, go ahead.
That sounds like it really would put you to sleep if you have like a headphones or something on to listen to that.
We haven't really talked about the visual style. Like, it looks like a metro map. Like, it doesn't... It's not like a realistic top-down kind of thing. Like, this is colored dots and lines.
I rode the Chicago Metro a couple weeks ago, and I was like, this is dead on. Like, it is exact. Like, it nails it. And that's very cool that I can totally see the developer writing the Metro, looking up and going, huh, that'd be an interesting game. And like, I'd be very surprised if that wasn't where the inspiration come from or came that was those maps. So eventually, obviously, things get too busy. And if a station has too many passengers who aren't able to get where they want to go, you'll lose. And even when you lose, though, it's just a minor chord instead of a major chord, you know, the game. But you definitely get to a point because, you know, every week you get to, you know, you get a new locomotive, and then you get your choice of either like a new line or a new tunnels or, you know, something like that to help you expand your network. But you can definitely get to the point, especially relatively early in the week when you get these new materials, where you use those materials instantly. It's like, okay, I just got a new line, but I know I've got these three new stations I need to connect. I play that out onto the map, and then there's really nothing I can do. Because, you know, when the game starts, it's very simple and clear. Okay, I need to connect these three points, and then these four points, then these five points. But the problem is, at a certain point, it gets more efficient for you to like kind of redo. Like your original loop doesn't work with this anymore.
Yeah.
But that means completely redoing a system, which just like it takes an amount of one quick moving with your mouse and quick thinking with your head that I don't want to do. So I definitely get to the point where it's like, okay, I've played my new you know, stuff out. I'm either fucked or I'm not. Like I'll just hang out and watch this thing play out until either I lose or I get to the new resources.
Yeah.
I just want the Phantom of the Opera to just start playing and then have like some drastic situation occur. That would be so exciting. In the narrative of my head and the video games that show up there, that's what happens in this game. I don't care what actually happens in the game. Continue.
No, so it's kind of like you get to that point and then you just kind of sleepily watch things play out. And then after that, I usually go to bed. Like this has become the game that I before I actually go to sleep.
You ruin somebody's commute and it's all in a day's work.
Yeah.
And then a chandelier falls on them.
You're bloodthirsty, Jala.
I am. Haven't you gotten the idea from like the carefully stacked piles of bodies I was discussing earlier?
I didn't want to admit it.
The meatballs.
Yeah, meatballs. And cannibal cowboys and
this is a beautiful game. It works very well on iPad is where I play this. Mm-hmm. And I mean,
I could see that working very well.
Ooh, it's on an iDevice. That would be a thing I would play at a time.
Yeah, no, it's like it. I don't know. I think that the visual choice is amazing. Like the game does stress me out, so I have to pick when I play it. But I don't know. Maybe that says more about me than about the game. So
yeah, it probably does.
Yeah,
it totally is. I'm looking at it on my phone right now, if you're wondering. It totally is a metro map, isn't it?
Isn't it? Yeah, it's a beautiful. It's
totally a metro map. It's $4.99 on iPhone.
What's the longest you've gone?
I've had pretty good. I'd have to look, but I know it's above 20 minutes.
Okay.
That said, I think the levels I've been playing on are relatively simple. For such a seemingly simple game, the maps that they play on make it really interesting. And really all the maps are different configurations of rivers, inspired by different locations. So right. London has the one, was it the Thames running down it or whatever?
I think you mean the Thames,
That word and so many others, I know there's a correct pronunciation and a wrong pronunciation, and my mind freaks out right before I say it and always defaults to the wrong one.
Well,
so,
no, you're like, yeah, you're always going to be
you
the
live
wrong
in Ohio one.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. We pronounced Bellefontaine Bellefountain, so
well, yeah.
In awesome. Versailles, Versailles.
Yep.
You totally have
there's Milan, Indiana.
Were you gonna say
the show thing going on schedule, and then the, you know, whatever you were just doing it again with your shoving. Stop shoving.
Shove.
Stop shoving.
Wait, which one of that is that aimed at? Like, which one of us is that aimed at?
Dennis. Okay. Dennis has been shoving.
Well, I've got extra CHs in my vocabulary tonight. I can't seem to work them out.
Oh man.
Yeah, this thing is times. But yeah, so different configurations of rivers, obviously inspired by different city locations. But that can make things really, you know, complicated when there's like one stop that needs two tunnels to get to it. Mm-hmm. But that is like taking up a huge amount of resources to get anywhere else.
Yeah. Mm. No, this is a really good game. I really dig its simplicity.
I almost want to play it just to see if it stresses me out so we can have a discussion about that.
I don't know if I can quantify it. Like, I really think that it is just the fact that people always line up at stations and then expect things from you.
What are you doing, Cole? Why are you asleep?
Yeah.
Meanwhile, Dennis is like, I'm gonna just take a nap.
There's like a programming equivalent to this game where it's like JavaScript elevators, where they like randomly generate people on different floors, and you have to program the logic of the elevators for them to successfully pick up people and drop them off.
I would love to see, because, you know, someone's job is to plan metro systems, and they have the same problem of, you know, once you put down a track, it's really hard to move. Only in this game, you actually can if you're fast enough. I would love to see like some kind of civil engineer just put on like a master class of mini metro. And I wonder how long you can keep it a sustainable system if you know the theory behind, like, hey, here's how you coordinate all these things.
Yeah.
Do you know the shape of the city or anything beforehand, or is it just the demand pops up and that's your only point of reference?
The camera starts very zoomed in on the same section of city every time, and you will always start with a triangle, a circle, and a square stop. But then everything after that is randomly generated, and I think even the location of those first three stops within the zoomed in screen is somewhat randomly generated. I mean, they'll be kind of in a triangle-esque. They kind of have to be, right? But but in a relatively equilateral triangle-esque positioning.
They could be in a line.
They could be. I don't think I've ever seen that, though. So who knows?
It doesn't have to be a straight line. Mm-hmm. Which gets into, like, you also have to manage, like track termination too. I believe, anyway, like, just that each track has to end somewhere, or a loop has to end somewhere, and where you place that actually will have an effect. Yeah,
and that's an interesting one, Ben. That's probably a great question for you. Is it always most I'm almost certain the answer is no, but is it always most effective to have your tracks be a loop, or are there instances where it's most effective to have the track be a line and the train kind of goes back and forth between ends of the line versus around in a loop?
I mean, I probably
need to give you more specifics than that.
Yeah, I would need more information. Yeah. But
data.
Huh.
I'm telling you, there's some civil engineer somewhere that's just gone to town on this game, and I'd be really curious to see their work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They were talking on Idle Thumbs about something very similar to that, like, where somebody who actually does know what they're talking about with this stuff has played it and, like, said, oh, like, there are principles about this. It might have been either this or some other similar game, but the idea is, like, oh, when you're able to so rapidly change things, this isn't actually mimicking a metro system, you know, either you know, like a streetcar or a subway. What it's really doing is mimicking a bus line, actually.
Oh, sure. Yeah, I could see that making a lot more sense.
Yeah like that doesn't jibe well with the fact that rivers kind of wreck you up in this, but sorry, I'm very distracted. I'm watching a video of somebody playing this, and they're kind of like, they're making it into just a real mess. It doesn't align with my sensibilities whatsoever.
Does it make you feel stressed out, Cole?
Yeah, a little bit. I'm going to close this window.
if you were really fast on your feet, you could min-max the hell out of this game. For example, because you can move a line at any time as long as a train isn't on it. And even then, you can move the line, but the train will complete its trip on the existing line before it switches over. For example, if there was an end of the line that didn't have people at it, you could just momentarily disconnect that stop as the train reached the preceding stop, so that the train would turn around and not even go to that last stop. Because otherwise it will always go to the end of the line and then turn around. And they will go through stops that don't have people at them. But if they can pick someone up, or if they can drop someone off, they always will stop. And they will always go past everything, at least. So there is some really interesting things you could do in terms of, like, having it set up to strategically connect and disconnect stops only when they're needed, versus always having everything connected. I'm way too sleepy when playing this game to actually figure that out. at some point I will decide I'm ready to go hardcore on Mini Metro and do that. But, But for right now, I just like to speculate that that kind of ability exists.
Yeah.
Mini Maxtro.
And this game is developed by a studio called Dinosaur Polo Club, which is pretty fun.
That's awesome. I want to see a dinosaur in a polo. Or yeah. I want to see dinosaurs playing polo.
Yeah, that's the thing. Or people playing polo on the back of dinosaurs. Yeah.
There's so many different places to go. Or the dinosaurs playing polo on the back of something else.
Mm-hmm.
That would be great.
Yeah. Huh. No, I'm happy you're playing this.
This has been added to my Phantom of the Opera version of the game.
We haven't even touched on water polo.
Yeah, water polo too.
Yeah. Can dinosaurs swim? I know there are prehistoric gigantic fish, but they're probably not actually fish. They're probably some kind of somebody's going to come in and say, actually, I don't care. They swam. They're fish.
Tar pit polo.
Oh God.
Awesome.
Anything else?
So many titles at the buzzer here.
Gotta get them in.
No, that's it for me.
No.
Toady 2017. It's begun.
Tar pit polo. It's one of those web-based kind of turn-based kind of things where it plays out in real time. So you just put in your orders and then you just have to wait for it to go. Yeah. So that sounds like an episode. Do you all want to button it up?
Buttons.
Yeah. The credit. Thank you so much for listening to level number 180. That is ridiculous. As I said that, the CPU on my computer was exactly 180 degrees, according to my status bar, which is a nice.
You're going to have to heat it up a degree every week now, Cole.
That is not tenable. Something is terribly wrong.
It feels like just yesterday that we recorded that episode 100 with all five of us on there.
Yeah. We're going to have to get six of us on the 200.
Oh, no.
I'm joking. No. I really don't want to do that.
That would go forever. It would never end.
Colin Gary, he was on the second episode.
The night would be more than infinite. thank you everybody for tuning in for this. I'm trying to think of like call to action kind of stuff. Jala, I know that you had a thing from the beginning. Why don't you reiterate that?
Okay, well, if you're still listening to this, you need to get on recording a message for me. I'm running my marathon, and I'm running it on Sunday, the 15th of January. And when this is released, it will be, if you're on the early release feed, it'll be the 12th. And if not, then it'll be on the 13th, which means that you need to, like, send me a thing now. If you want to be nice to me and encourage me during my marathon when I hit the wall and I'm dying and I'm running alone for 4+ hours, you can totally just record something nice and send it to me. You can get in touch with me via all of your normal social media stuff at Jalachan. Mm-hmm. And yeah, please do. I would like to. I'm going to have a lot of time to listen to those things when I'm dying. So.
That got
this
dark.
Is why I'm so violent. Yeah. I'm trying to get out all my anxiety about this marathon. That's what it is.
Oh, yeah. I would encourage people to, even just if you can't record something, send Jala props and, encouragement on social media ahead of time. Yeah.
Yeah. Sure. Well, and also on the day of the marathon, you can probably look up my bib number just by pulling up my name on the ChevronHoustonMarathon.com website. Mm-hmm. There's also an app and you can track where the hell I am and stuff. So you can do that thing. I'm going to be running for a while, so there's plenty of time. So
very cool. Yeah. As for the show and as for the network, the usual stuff. Duckfeed.tv /store is a place where you can go buy premium episodes of different shows than this one, but I want to make sure people know about it. If you want to support the show or the network more directly, go to patreon.com/duckfeedtv, and that helps out all of us. Other than that, why don't we do the usual roll call and then go talk about some titles? So I've been Cole Ross at Cole Ross on Twitter.
I've been Dennis Furia at DFuria on Twitter.
I'm not going to rage about it. I'll be nice. I'm Jala John in places.
You know it's coming, so.
I know. Well, I already said my thing earlier.
Yeah.
You know?
Ben?
Ben Merkel at Merkelizer on Twitter.
And stick around for some titles. Okay, so by your exhausted hooting, I think that you have something to put in, so go for it.
Oh my god, do I? All right, I've got the Pern grenade.
Okay, I have Fall on the Pern grenade.
Yep, Fall on the Pern grenade. Beating a Dead Dragon. The Nintendo Bait. I thought that was pretty good. Yeah. Pre-order of the year. The DO2 alarm.
Okay.
Mini Maxtro. Maxtro, which I think is absolutely brilliant. Okay. I think that one's my favorite. But then obviously Tar Pit Polo.
What's awesome is that I have a totally different list except for Tar Pit Polo.
Yeah. I had the Pern Grenade, DO2 Alarm, and Tar Pit Polo. So
nice.
Yeah.
Oh man, Mini Maxtro just strikes a chord with me. Yeah, pun intended.
yeah. So did you have anything else, Dennis?
No, okay. That's it.
Jala.
Okay, touch my Seafall.
Okay.
Secure in my whateverhood.
Okay.
Teflon the Teflon.
With a colon in the middle?
Yes.
Yeah, I had that too. Yeah.
Sky Blue, Earth Spin. I liked that.
Yeah.
Crassly Speaking the Truth. Mm-hmm. Ratastrophe.
Ah, Ratastrophe.
Don't reward that. Yeah.
Colons. That was a bad pun from me.
Colons? Oh, no.
Colons, because Cole can't take the colons. Mm. I don't need your letters.
What was that from?
That was Vermintide. Talking about that. Yeah. Okay. Oh, whatever. Yeah. And then Crazy Cannibal Cowboys.
Okay.
That's it.
All right. And Ben, how about you?
I had a lot of titles written down, but there was a lot of overlap. So the ones that I have that were different are Bodies and Places, which I don't even remember the context of that one.
Me?
Might have been Jala talking about Dishonored. But,
yeah. Oh,
yep. That's me talking about all the bodies I place in places.
I put I'm Cool in my whateverhood. Slightly close. Okay. I had Spectacle with a CH yes. in it.
Okay.
I had Meat Walls. And then I had Daddy, do Jaws come off that easily?
God, we got so many titles.
Yeah, so many.
Cole, you have more?
No, so the only one that I have that is that is different than that is Competent Choppers.
Nice.
I forget what that related to. So
yeah, I think you should share your repeats because it helps us know where people's heads
are
at.
Yeah. What are your repeats, Ben?
My repeats were Touch My Seafall, Teflon Teflon colon, Teflon the Teflon, the Nintendo Bait, and Ratastrophe.
Okay. So let me see here. Ratastrophe. When you say touch my bait, do you mean bait like what I catch fish with, or bait as in the end of the word masturbate?
No, I had the... Are you talking about the Nintendo bait? I had touch my Seafall and I had the Nintendo bait.
Okay, the Nintendo bait, yeah. How is bait spelled?
B-A-I-T, of course. Bait and switch, dude.
Okay, yeah, there we go.
Yes.
All right, I forgot the context of that. So Teflon, Teflon, Teflon the Teflon is the vote winner.
Mm-hmm. I feel like that's very close to Corvax is Corvax for Corvax.
Yeah, we've done that kind of a joke before.
Yeah. So. Okay. So nothing else got as many votes as that. The repeat ones are Fall on the Pern Grenade or Pern Grenade, Tar Pit Polo, DO2 Alarm, Touch My Seafall, Secure My Whateverhood, Ratastrophe. Tar Pit Polo is the one that people laughed at the most.
Yeah, that's fair. I like Tar Pit Polo. I like Secure in My Whateverhood, and then I like Falling on the Pern Grenade.
What were you gonna say, Jala?
I didn't have anything to say in particular.
I'm good with any of them.
Okay. Let's do, let me think here. So the Pern grenade, that was like a small thing at the beginning. I think Tar Pit Polo might actually be, because we talked about Mini Metro a lot, that might be that might be the one that is most linked to the show.
Yeah, yeah, that's a good one. Okay. Okay. Yeah, I like it.
Let's do that.
All right. Okay. Well,
that was a good batch of titles.
I know. Like it is
like, many. Like what was that, like 15? I mean, God.
It's prodigious is what it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
no. Anytime somebody says that, I just think about Digimon and Izzy from Digimon, who says that all the time. Ugh. So
I just think about the band Prodigy.
Oh gosh, and that guy they hired to dance.
Clearly, y'all need to go to bed.
That guy they hired to dance for the Firestarter video, who joined the band as a dancer and became their frontman just as a dancer. A real thing about Prodigy. Look them up.
That's great.
All right, well, I need to go to bed as well, as bizarre as that sounds, but I cannot let my naply indiscretions mess up my sleep schedule. Dennis, if you want to come by for lunch, we're having Chipotle tomorrow.
That sounds good.
Yeah.
I think naply indiscretion should be the title now.
I know, right?
I might be working from home tomorrow. I'm not sure, but I will let you know either way.
Yep. Open invitation.
Yeah. Thank you for the offer.
Yeah. All right. Hope everybody has a good night and week and all of that stuff. Later.
Yeah.
All right.
Bye.
See you guys.
Bye.
Bye.